are Locked On Giants, your daily San Francisco Giants podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to Locked On Giants Baseball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Kaspic, and on this show, we provide daily episodes talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's data-driven and rational, but also simple, passionate, and accessible to all. Today's episode is brought to you by Locker Room. Download the app and join me next week to get in on the action. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports. I'm a former contributor for the baseball statistics and analysis websites Beyond the Box Score and Rotographs. I've been podcasting about the Giants since 2015, and I'm a lifelong fan. And I do apologize for the weirdness with the schedule. Some of you may have noticed there was no podcast yesterday, although 2 days ago it came out late at night, so maybe it looked like there was. Anyway, we should be back on schedule now, and we could even possibly have a bonus episode coming out at some point. But today's going to be a mailbag. We are recording this before the Giants home opener, so we may do a podcast after the home opener. Maybe not, but anyway. Today's going to be a mailbag, and then definitely on Monday we'll be talking about this series against the Rockies. But I do just want to jump right in. We had several questions about the struggling offense, so that's going to be where we're going to start. So there's literally four different questions that are kind of similar, so I'm going to actually just read them all and then try to answer them all. Dev asks, if the offense keeps struggling, when do you think is a good time to start worrying about it? Curtis says, should we be concerned about some of the struggling hitters? Small sample size, but they've struck out a lot and haven't hit it hard. Duggar Memes says, are we going to start to see an outfield shuffle if things don't start going as planned? Yaz Dickerson and Dubon's bats haven't woken up. And then finally, John says, do you think part of the problem with Dickerson's poor numbers has to do with his sporadic playing time so far? So you may or may not be surprised to know that the Giants' non-pitcher weighted runs created plus, which is just an all-encompassing offensive metric with 100 being league average, Giants are at 90, so 10% below average offensive production so far. Takes into account everything from, you know, properly weighting a single versus a double versus a home run, etc., and giving you credit for walks. So being 10% below average obviously is not great, but there's also 11 teams that have been worse. And a lot of those teams are American League teams that have a DH. I mean, the Giants did have a DH in half their games. One thing I just want to point out is that they just played the Padres, who have a really good pitching staff. They had to face Yu Darvish. They had to face Blake Snell. These are two of the better pitchers in baseball. And so the fact that those were low-scoring games doesn't really concern me. Through six games last year, the Giants were significantly worse than this. And they, of course, ended up having a great year as an offense. Let's remember, too, that, like, specifically Brandon Belt looked absolutely terrible when he came off the injured list last year. And then he went on to just have an unbelievably monster year. So, no, I'm not really worried. I'm going to try to specifically answer some of the questions. Dev says, when do you think is a good time to start worrying about it? Honestly, this is an answer that people might not want to hear because it's kind of boring and it tells you not to freak out. But I said the other day, and I stand by it, you need about 45 games before you really could have a strong argument to make that there's some kind of issue. Like, if they're still really, you know, 10% below average or something after 45 games, then there's reason to believe that they are just below average. And we would look at, you know, each individual player and say what's sustainable, what's not, what's going on. But six games, including three against a really good pitching staff, does not tell me much at all. So Curtis says, should we be concerned about some of the struggling hitters? I would just say no. I mean, honestly, Yastrzemski's one that concerns me more than others just because he looks so out of whack and he's just chasing way more than he was last year. But let's just give him some time. I just think that it's not enough time, and you face some better or some worse pitching staffs and you face a lot more righties. Yastrzemski's had to face really good pitchers and a lot of lefties. So let's just give him some more time. Duggar memes, in terms of shuffling up the outfield, they kind of have with Dubon. Like, they've put Slater out there in center field against righties. So Dubon, I expect him to continue to get starts against lefties. And in fact, today's starter is a lefty. So it'll probably be Slater in left, Dubon in center, and Yaz in right. But they could opt for Darren Ruff just because he's been hitting the ball really well. One of the few guys to do it. But I don't think, I mean, they're not going to like demote Alex Dickerson or Mike Yastrzemski. Those guys are going to continue to play in their roles. Yaz could see less time against left-handed starters if he continues to really scuffle, but he is 100% going to be there again in there against righties, and so is Dickerson. So in terms of your question, John, about Dickerson's poor numbers having to do with sporadic playing time, in some ways, yes, because he hasn't gotten a chance to play a lot because they face a lot of lefties. But in some ways, no, because this has always been his role. He is, like, in his entire Giants career, he doesn't start against left-handed starting pitchers. And also, like Brandon Belt last year, Dickerson struggled a lot out of the gates. And I forget, I mean, I don't know exactly how many games had gone by before he caught fire, but it was some significant number, like 15 or 20. And once he caught fire, he really caught fire and ended up having a monster season, 60 games. But, you know, when the sample got bigger, the numbers got better. And that's what I would fully expect. There's just no way, if you look at, like, Brandon Belt has been 103% below average, not going to last. Yastrzemski has been 60% below average, not going to last. Belt and Yastrzemski striking out over 40% of the time. Not going to last. So anyway, we could go on and on, but that's kind of my thoughts about it. At some point, you worry, but it's way too early for that. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the righty relievers. There's a lot of questions about that also, and I think they're valid, and so we'll break that down next. But first, I want to tell you about betonline.ag. It's the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football and college basketball might be over, but the NBA, NHL, and MLB are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. They've got real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best place to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Lots of baseball action you can get in on at BetOnline. We'll be talking about it a lot as the season goes on. I feel like there's some opportunities there, so go and check out what they've got to offer. Head to their website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit with the promo code LOCKEDON. Bet online, your online sportsbook experts. All right, as promised, we're going to talk about the Giants' righty relievers. Tyler Rogers, Reyes Maranta, and Matt Whistler. Those are the only righty relievers in this bullpen. And, you know, they've not done so well. Rogers blew a game the other day, their last game. I mean, he gave up a lead, but the Giants thankfully came back and won. And, of course, Matt Whistler has had his struggles also. So there's a lot of questions about that. But first, I need you to know that you can get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. So, odd year tragic, like that name, by the way. Hopefully, it's not tragic in 2021. But they ask, how long can the Giants survive with three current righties they have in the pen? It's a bit too early to tell, I guess, but I wonder what the timeline is to get Maranta back into higher leveraged opportunities. Juan asks, right-handed pitchers out of the pen have come out of the season struggling. How long of a leash will Farhan and Kapler have with them before Camilo, Duvall, and others get a shot? I'm okay with Reyes, one home run, and clean with everything else so far. And then finally, Aaron says, how concerning is it that Reyes Maranta doesn't have a strikeout to start the season? He's inducing a lot of weak contact at the moment, but I'm not sure how sustainable that is when hitters start to figure out he doesn't have the same fastball he used to have. So the righty relievers have definitely become a topic for conversation, and I think it's totally valid. Pulling up Fangraph's wins above replacement, Giants relievers as a whole are 26th out of 30 teams. Interestingly, if I look at the Dodgers bullpen, they're 27th. So that should just tell you a little bit about small sample stuff. The Dodgers, to be fair, have played a series in Coors Field, but Dodgers relievers have been worse than Giants relievers. And Oakland too, and they're known as having a good bullpen. And Milwaukee has one of the best bullpens in the game. Their team walk rate from their bullpen is worse than the Giants. So that tells us a lot, honestly. I didn't even realize that until right now. But looking at the individual players, their five most effective relievers thus far have been their five lefties. There's three righties, and they're at the bottom of this Fangraphs wins above replacement category. Honestly, wins above replacement is not really effective at evaluating relievers, so I shouldn't have even said that. Like, for example, Maranta has an ERA of 3. Tyler Rogers has an ERA of 2.45. But again, in small samples, that doesn't really tell us all that much either. I will just point out, looking at this, Giants have 4 out of their 8 relievers with an ERA of 0. And then 2 more, like I said, have ERAs of 3 and 2.45. So it's really just been Whistler, whose ERA is 32.4, and Harleen Garcia, whose ERA is 13.5. But that wasn't really the question. I just thought that was an interesting point to make. The point is about these righties. So just because I can't remember which order I went in, but Maranta, the question was, how concerning is it that he doesn't have a strikeout? I would say not very concerning at all, because it's early, and I've actually freaked out about this before, or at least made a point about it. Like, I think it was last year, actually. The Giants were not getting a lot of strikeouts. They were in the very bottom of the league in strikeout rate, and I recall there was an article written in The Athletic that said, because they remember they also started really poorly on defense, and it said that their low strikeout rate was a bad combination with their poor defense because they're not striking people out, so there's a lot of defense involved, and on and on and on. But they ended up having a much better strikeout rate than what those early numbers indicated. So in Maranta's case specifically, he's pitched 3 innings. He's faced 10 batters. 10 batters. So it's not that uncommon at all to go through a lineup one time and not strike anybody out. I mean, it is a little bit uncommon in today's game, but I would not read into it too much at this point. Strikeout rate is one of the faster things to stabilize, though. So if we get Maranta, if he gets to 10 innings even and he still has a strikeout rate that's really low, then I would start to think that there's something to that. He also hasn't walked a batter, which is really unusual for him. So one of his strengths has always been inducing weak contact. And so far this year, he's only allowed the one hit, which was a homer, to the 10 batters he faced. So we'll see. That is definitely something to monitor. But after 3 innings and 10 batters, I'm just not ready to panic. Matt Whistler, I mean, honestly, I'm a little bit encouraged in some ways because he's got a pretty good strikeout rate going. Actually, interestingly, this is like a prime example of how strikeouts per 9 and strikeout percentage can tell us very different stories. He's at 10.8 strikeouts per 9, which is really good. It's above average. Yet, his actual strikeout rate is just 16.7%. And for context, last year it was 32.7%. So 16.7 is well below average. So that's a story for another day. But basically, if you're allowing a lot of base runners, you might end up striking out three batters in the inning, but you allowed like seven guys to come to the plate. So your actual rate of striking them out is lower than the strikeouts per nine would indicate. So again, it's early. Like, just there's so much weirdness with Whistler's numbers. What is concerning is the walks, because he struggled with walks last year also. And the walk rate this year is not that much worse than it was last year. And so I think one of the hopes was that he would tone that down versus what it was last year, but that doesn't seem to be the case so far. He's also allowing home runs on 50% of his fly balls right now, which is, you know, home run to fly ball ratio is an indicator of, it's not luck, but it's something we know, nobody is that bad. And so the home runs are going to calm down. And also the average on balls in play against him is 571. So that is another thing that's going to come down. However, there's just no getting around it. He hasn't been good. And so, as I said the other day, I would lay off him a little bit. I wouldn't put him into a one-run game in the eighth inning. But knowing Gabe Kapler, I mean, he likes to show confidence in his guys. So I wouldn't be surprised if he does that. Plus, this whole point is that they don't have a lot of righty options. And so it's got to be him or Rogers or Maranta if you want a righty in there. So, yeah, I don't have a ton of confidence in these three right now. So I get the question is fair. And in terms of when we might see a shakeup, I wouldn't be shocked if they're close to that point. If they continue to do this, maybe another couple games, they're going to try to sort it out and send somebody down to work on stuff. They need to get someone in here who can be really effective. All right, coming up next, more questions and answers. We have questions about extending players, Kevin Gausman, and many others. But first, I want to tell you about our good friends over at Built Bar. If you know me, you know that I love these bars. The taste is definitely the best part, but if you're a health-conscious person like me, the real kicker is that somehow they're very low in calories and low in sugar. I would not be eating a protein bar, frankly, that's high in sugar, but Built Bar manages to taste like a candy bar and be extremely low in sugar. Just to give you an example, the Cookies and Cream bar has 17 grams of protein and just 130 calories and 4 grams of sugar. Built Bar has even reset the promo code for this relaunch. For a limited time, you can also get a free cooler with your purchase while supplies last. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. All right, finally, many other questions about extending players, and then I have a ton of questions. I don't think I'm going to be able to get to them all. In fact, I know I won't. I often say, oh, I'm going to try, but then it never happens. So Jesse asks, how aggressive do you think the Giants will be about extending players during the season, given how many roster spots will be open at the end of the season, and who is most likely to get an extension? Matt asks, I'd like to see the Giants extend Kevin Gausman during the season, considering they have a lot of money coming off the payroll. Do you think they can, and how much do you think it would be? So getting to Jesse's question first, I honestly don't expect them to be very aggressive with this, simply because it's pretty uncommon for players to want to negotiate contracts during the season. It does not happen that often where you see extensions happen during the season. And so if it were to happen, I would expect it probably only to happen with like one guy, because as uncommon or unexpected or rare as that may be, it would be even more rare if you start having multiple guys. There's certainly probably some exceptions, like if somebody's really struggling and you offer them a bunch of money, then they'd probably be interested. But at the same time, like, okay, so getting to the second part of it, Kevin Gausman. And to me, I think he would be the most likely. I think he's like the only guy that it's clear that they have interest in a multi-year deal, as they should. I mean, he has gotten a lot better since coming to the Giants, and they helped him do it. And so it's a good partnership, and he's become the face of the pitching staff. There's no doubt about that. And like the fact that going into 2022 or just into this offseason, every single guy, I guess except for Logan Webb right now, who's in that rotation is going to be a free agent. So there's so much uncertainty looking ahead. You know, it is important to point out that it is a long season, and there's going to be pitchers who debut, and maybe multiple guys step in and prove they're worthy of a role. I think Tyler Beattie's going to get a real opportunity to continue to be a starter when he comes back, which shouldn't be too much longer. But Gausman, I do think they'd be interested in bringing him back. However, he could pitch himself out of what they would feel comfortable giving him, honestly. Like, he bet on himself. He had multi-year offers, at least from the Blue Jays and probably also from the Giants. But he opted to accept the, you know, very nice $18.9 million qualifying offer. So he bet on himself. He got the fat payday for this year, but he also was betting on having another really good season and getting an even better multi-year contract after this year. So it's honestly, it's a little hard to say what I think that contract would end up being. He is just 30 years old. He'll be 30 until January of 2022. I want to say like 4 years, $60 million or something, maybe even more. And he could be looking for longer term, like 6 years. But teams just don't like to give long-term contracts to pitchers unless they're elite, elite, elite. So I think that's kind of in the neighborhood of what he was being offered. Maybe more like 3 years and $45 million. So at $15 million a year over 4 years, 4 years, $60 million. I think that sounds fair to me, but he could be aiming higher than that. Like if he has a full season like he had in 2020, if he puts up the numbers from 2020 over a full year, he could definitely even climb higher. So in a way, that's really good because the Giants are going to benefit this year potentially from him pitching for that contract. So we'll see. I don't really expect this to happen though. But at the same time, he's the guy, so I wouldn't also be shocked if it did happen. Hagen asks, what record do you think the Giants will have at the trade deadline? Will they be selling or buying? And are they going to call up any top prospects throughout the year? And when will they if they do? And then Curtis says, looking ahead, is it possible to see another half sell, half buy at the deadline? We may have a lot of tempting trade pieces. That's so true. And it's kind of an underrated factor in what they're doing. Because a Kevin Gausman becomes an excellent trade chip if the Giants aren't contending. So it's like kind of a win-win. If you're contending, great, you keep them. And if you're not, you have some pieces to flip. So in terms of what record I think they'll have, I'm on record saying I think they'll be 10 games over 500 this year. That's definitely a rosy outlook, but I also think it's not unrealistic. So I'll say like kind of right around 500, maybe 4-5 games over 500. And in fact, a couple years ago, they were over 500 around the deadline, if I'm not mistaken. And then last year also, they were certainly in contention. So I would expect them to be the same or better than they've been the last couple years, which is kind of firmly in the race a little bit, but not probably commanding a lead or anything like that. So yeah, I think another half sell, half buy could definitely be in the works. And then regarding the top prospects, yeah, I think that we're going to get a look at Elliot Ramos. I think Joey Bart will come back. And then we're going to see some pitchers also. This is definitely a year when I think they want to have, you know, get a look at some of those guys, even if it's just in September. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. There's a bunch more questions that I wish I had a chance to get to. Thank you to everyone who submitted questions. I'll save these other ones for later, next time we do a mailbag. If you like this show, please consider rating it or leaving a review. You know it helps me out so much, so thank you in advance, and thank you to everyone who's done so. Once again, my name is Ben Kaspic. You can follow me on Twitter, at Ben Kaspic. That's K-A-S-P-I-C-K. Enjoy the home opener. Enjoy this series. We'll be back on Monday talking about three things we learned over the weekend. So until then, we'll see you next time.